This is The National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin, and we are here once again to answer your questions.
This is Joan Mora in Jamestown, Rhode Island.
I'm Jerry Smithy.
Hi, my name is Naomi Houston, and I have a few questions.
Would anyone care to speculate about what the career prospects might look like in a post-COVID-19 world?
How is the number of deaths from COVID-19 affecting the overall worldwide population?
I was curious to know what the economic impact is going to be on the smaller local governments.
How can small businesses apply for the SBA loans if our scores plummet? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
NPR journalists and outside experts are on hand to offer solid facts, to tell you what we know, and to correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. Send us your questions about health issues, the economy, or even just how to adjust to this new reality we're all dealing with, like having to cut your own hair. Go to npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. And every night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? The infection rate in the U.S. is above 860,000, and more than 49,000 Americans have died from the novel coronavirus. Meanwhile, as states grapple with a deepening economic crisis, Senate Majority Leader Republican Mitch McConnell suggested that some states should consider filing for bankruptcy protection.
I would certainly be in favor of allowing states to use the bankruptcy route. It saved some cities, and there's no good reason for it not to be available.
Governors from both parties criticized the remarks, including Democrat Andrew Cuomo of New York.
It's one of the dumb statements of all time. Mitch McConnell, they're talking about bringing back the economy, and then he says states should declare bankruptcy. How does that help the national economy?
Just hours ago, the House voted on a $484 billion relief package. Representatives on the House floor conducted an historic vote wearing face coverings and voting in small groups.
The last group of House members, Representative Torres Small to Representative Lee Zeldin, are now headed to the House floor.
And the Labor Department today said that 4.4 million people filed for unemployment benefits last week. So with that sobering number on our minds, we're going to start with NPR's chief economics correspondent, Scott Horsley, and he's here once again to answer your questions. Scott, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Good evening. Good to be with you.
As we just heard, the House passed a nearly $500 billion relief package. The president is expected to sign it soon. So, Scott, how will the money be distributed, and are we expecting there to be even more financial help down the line?
Michelle, most of this money, more than $320 billion, is going to go to that emergency lending program aimed at small businesses to help them survive this pandemic. Businesses can borrow money at low interest rates, and if they use the money to keep workers on the payroll, then the loan is forgiven altogether. There has been enormous demand for this program. There was an earlier, even larger round of funding, which was gobbled up in less than 2 weeks. This money is also expected to go fast, so there could be a push for another round. The package passed tonight also includes $75 billion for hospitals and about $25 billion for more coronavirus testing.
And also today, we got the latest unemployment numbers, 26 million people in just 5 weeks. And those numbers are just dreadful. Scott, I don't have to tell you that because you watch them every day. But are there any signs that job losses are slowing down?
Yeah, it's remarkable. But as bad as it sounds and as bad as it is to have 4.4 million people filing for unemployment last week, that is down about 15% from the previous week. Claims have actually been dropping for the last 3 weeks, but as you say, they're still really high. 26 million Americans jobless, that's about one out of six who were working back in February before the pandemic started walloping the economy here in the U.S.
All right, so let's get to some listener questions, and we will start with one from Monica in Denver.
How is the number of deaths from COVID-19 affecting the overall worldwide population? And is that effect worth the economic damage that we are doing to our economies?
So, Scott, let me just say that this question could include a whole host of philosophical and moral issues, but it sounds to me that what Monica wants to know is what is the cost-benefit calculation between health and the economy?
That's right. Nice to hear from Monica in my hometown of Denver. So far, the coronavirus has infected 2.6 million people worldwide. It's killed more than 186,000. I think you said 49,000 here in the U.S. That's the most of any country. And of course, those numbers are still growing, and they would be growing faster had we not adopted some of these very costly social distancing measures. Obviously, we are hearing some debate in this country now about whether the lives saved are worth the economic price tag, although a solid majority of Americans still support the social distancing measures. You know, economists who studied past pandemics say deadly diseases carry their own price tag if they're left unchecked. So it could be that the short-term cost of hunkering down will pay off in the long run. Keep in mind, it is not as if the economy would be chugging along seamlessly in the absence of these stay-at-home orders. An unchecked epidemic puts its own kind of damper on commerce.
Now here's a question from Jennifer in Point Arena, California.
I'm wondering, what do the experts think of the chances of union pension funds like operating engineers and CalSTRS, the California State Teacher Retirement System, staying solvent through the pandemic? How about Social Security? If those funds tank, people are going to need a lot more than a couple of checks from the federal government. Has the federal government made any moves to maintain or bolster these funds?
Yeah,
well, Scott, what about that? You know, payroll taxes support Social Security. So how's that all working?
We actually just got a report on the solvency on Social Security this week, and the report says Social Security is still totally solvent for another 15 years or so. That hasn't really changed. That means it can keep paying full benefits at least through the early 2030s. But certainly payroll taxes support the program, and those are going to take a hit from having 26 million more people unemployed for a while. Jennifer mentions CalSTRS and other government pensions, which could be hit by state budget woes, as well as the drop in the value of their stock investments. The same is true for private sector union pensions. There is going to be pressure on the federal government to help fill holes in state budgets, but you heard Republican Senate Leader Mitch McConnell say Republicans are not likely to favor any effort to use federal money to prop up state pensions, so that could be a fight.
If you have a question for NPR's Scott Horsley, send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation or on social media. Use that hashtag, NPR Conversation. All right, here's a question about the global pandemic's economic toll on the local level.
My name is Allison Tombarge, and I'm from Lexington, Virginia. And I was curious to know what the economic impact is going to be on the smaller local governments around the U.S.
Yeah, not good, that's for sure. State and local governments are taking a big hit. They're faced now with a double whammy. Their costs are going up for things like public health measures and higher Medicaid expenses, and their revenues are going down. Sales taxes are down because people aren't shopping. Income taxes will be down because so many people aren't working. The hit to state budgets alone is forecast to be around $500 billion, and unlike the federal government, states can't put that on the credit card. Local governments are also going to feel the squeeze, and if they don't get some help, we are likely to see a whole nother round of layoffs by state and local governments. We saw that happen during the last recession, where that was sort of an echo wave of the private sector layoffs, and it just makes the hole that much deeper and harder to crawl out of.
Here's a question about how the Federal Reserve has responded to the pandemic.
I'm Jerry Smithy from Iowa City, Iowa. My question is that the virus has been the impetus for monetary stimulus programs, which have already resulted in added trillions to the national debt. How will this affect inflation for citizens and businesses?
Scott. Yeah, and inflation is always a concern it's always cited as a concern when the Fed pumps a lot of money into the economy, which they're certainly doing now. But, you know, keep in mind, the inflation has been running below the Federal Reserve's target of 2% for a long time now. And most economists say it's just not a big threat right now. We have got a long list of things that we can be losing sleep over. Inflation should probably be pretty far down on that list.
Okay, let me see if I can.
Since Jerry's from Iowa,
one thing to
lose sleep over. I had to cancel the RAGBRAI this week, or postpone it for a year. That's a blow for the No Pie Refuse team here at NPR.
I don't understand a single thing you just said, but I take your credit. I take your word that's a big deal. All right, this next question I really want to be sure we can get in, because we've heard this from a number of people this week, and this is from Claire in California.
My question is, after talking with the company that has my auto loan and getting paused while I'm not working due to the coronavirus, why was it still reported to the credit bureaus? Also, why aren't the main three credit bureaus pausing updates? How can small businesses apply for the SBA loans if our scores plummet? Thank you.
Scott, I've heard this from a number of people who've written in this the last couple of weeks. What do we know about this?
So I put this question to the folks at the Center for Responsible Lending, who are a great resource, by the way. They told me that the CARES Act that Congress passed, that's the big $2 trillion bill, did say that if a borrower makes an arrangement with a lender to defer payments, lenders are not supposed to file a negative report with a credit bureau that would hurt the borrower's credit rating. But that's only true if the borrower was current on his or her payments when the arrangement was made. If the borrower was behind, the lender is allowed to file. Now, consumer advocates are pushing to suspend all negative credit rating reporting till this pandemic's over. So this could be a topic when Congress looks at the next relief bill.
All right. That is NPR Chief Economics Correspondent Scott Horsley. Scott, thank you so much.
You bet.
You can hear more of our coverage when you download the NPR One app. Go to the Explore tab and click on the coronavirus outbreak for a curated stream of stories. Keep sending those questions to npr.org/national conversation or use that hashtag NPR Conversation. Up next, your questions about flattening the curve.